powered from the Sereno Cigar Company studio in North Carolina and broadcasting from the Ventura Cigar Company studios in California, it's episode 112 of the Primetime Show. Tonight, we are honored to welcome the one and only Lars Teton to Primetime for the Lars Teton's Experience. And this episode of the Primetime Show is sponsored by Saga Cigars. Every new blend borrows from the past, and the Saga Blend Number 7 has done just that. It is the perfect combination of timeless knowledge of traditional tobaccos and the newer balance that today's cigar enthusiasts come to expect and love in a finer cigar. Leveraging six generations of experience and tradition of the Reyes family, the Saga Blend Number 7 delivers a full-flavored, medium-bodied cigar. The cigar is highlighted by a Brazilian wrapper over a blend of Central American and Dominican tobacco. Available in three sizes at an affordable price, Saga Blend Number 7 is sure to please and bring together past and present. And by Perdomo Cigars. Awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has consistently earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers, a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan Sungrown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with rich flavors of and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigars, a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selección Vintage, the Perdomo 12-year Vintage, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary, the Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Champagne, the Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Villiger Cigars. Since 1888, Villiger Cigars have been experts in everything tobacco, including offering a wide range of premium cigars for all connoisseurs. Villiger's La Vencedora, which translates to the Victor, is the first full-body Villiger cigar, and it carries a special meaning to Villiger chairman of the board, Heinrich Villiger. The Villiger La Vencedora, or the Victor, represents to Mr. Villiger the arrival of Villiger cigars to the premium handmade cigar market. It was time, in his opinion, to push the envelope and create a legacy cigar that will serve as a proper follow-up to the highly acclaimed Villiger La 40 and Glam brand. This Nicaraguan Puro is wrapped in a beautiful Nicaraguan Habano Escuro wrapper, boasting full-bodied smoking experience and featuring highly seasoned and hearty flavors. Be sure to ask your retailer for La Vencedora, and you can visit Villiger's entire line of premium cigars at www.villigercigars.com. And by Drew Estate, check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes or Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And this live stream is brought to you exclusively by Drew Estate Cigars. Welcome, everybody. This is episode 112 of the Primetime Show. As we enter the month of October, it's October 3rd, 2019. Will Cooper here. I'm in the Sereno Cigar Company studios, joined cross country by my friend and colleague, Mr. Aaron Loomis.
How you doing tonight, Will?
Very hot. That's what I can say.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we're supposed to break out of this heat wave at the end of the week, but the studio was pretty hot today, and I had to cool it down, so I wasn't in the studio as early as I like, and that just kind of throws everything back a little. What the good news is, I have some new lighting that was installed here, so I'm gonna see how it goes. It's much brighter, believe it or not, where I don't have to use as much of the additional lights now.
You look fantastic.
Oh, I feel great, right? I feel great after doing that reading there. So, right. But we have an awesome show tonight. I think we're very honored to welcome our special guest. He is coming to us tonight from Chicago, Illinois. The one and only Lars Teton's. Lars, welcome to Primetime.
Hey, brother. How you doing? It's great to be here.
Oh, it's an honor to have you, and we do appreciate you making the time. We know you're on the road doing an event, and to make time for us, we definitely appreciate it.
Well, I'm loving it.
That's great. That's great. So where are you tonight? What shop are you in?
I'm in a cigar shop called Bad Ash, and it's in Illinois. It's not in Chicago. It's outside the city, about an hour, maybe something like that.
Okay. What's the weather like there tonight? Is it cool? Is it hot?
It's chilly. It's cold.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a little windy and cold.
It was 98 degrees in North Carolina this afternoon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That is good.
Yeah. So Lars, definitely, we do appreciate the time there. You know, Lars, this has been a big year for you. You know, you've kind of come back into the spotlight and we've really created a lot of excitement. But we want to kind of go back to the beginning a little. And, you know, before you kind of even started making cigars, were you actually ever a cigar smoker prior to making cigars?
When I was 9 years old, I started smoking cigars. And I basically have been smoking cigars ever since. Wow. I really, pretty much every day I was smoking a cigar since I was nine.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
How were you acquiring the cigars back then?
Well, I had, there's a place, I don't know if I should even be saying it, a place in Albany, New York, that a restaurant that had a fair stock of Cuban cigars, and I had friends there that were like, thought it would be funny to see a little kid choking on Cuban cigars. But I didn't, and I was smoked it, I loved it, and I was like, I kind of learned how to make this. And it took me a long time, you know, but by the time I was 15, though, I had two people who were teaching me how to roll cigars. And I started rolling cigars, started making my own blends, and then selling them to stores. Well, I didn't really sell them to stores. The two cigar factories that I was working at sold. And at that point, they basically didn't even know my name. They just called it White Boy Cigars. And, you know, I was cleaning up the factory and stuff just so that they would teach me how to roll cigars. And they would just say, hey, White Boy, do this. White Boy, do that. Right. When I started rolling cigars, it was White Boy Cigars. Like a little circus act.
What type of cigars were you smoking at 9 years old is what I want to know.
Cuban. Yeah.
Where were you growing up? Like where you had access? When you started getting into the cigar making as a youngster, still. Obviously,
New York City.
Wow. Yeah. I should have guessed that.
Yeah, on 29th Street, and Jesus Martinez still has that store that his father used to work in. When his father had, when he used to work there as a roller, he started teaching me how to roll cigars, and I started making blends from tobacco that they couldn't use because it wasn't the right tobacco they had ordered. So I just started making blends. And then another guy on 30th Street, Sanchez, he started teaching me how to roll cigars too. And I started making blends there. And then those blends became more successful blends.
What type of cigars were those early cigars?
What now?
What type were they the conditioned cigars or were they just more traditional?
I started conditioning cigars really very quickly. So I had done some studying and the history of cigars, and I realized that the oldest knowledge that we have on cigars and cigar making come from Venezuela, where they have from archaeological sites stone statues of like the women shamans of the leaders of the tribe smoking cylinder-shaped cigars. And there were cigar molds over 6,000 years ago on stone, cylinder-shaped cigar molds.
I never knew that. Venezuela.
Yeah, Venezuela.
When you kind of started coming, what kind of led you to this concept? Because you were really one of the innovators in terms of this concept of a conditioned cigar. The industry really
I was the originator.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so what kind of led you to kind of come up with this idea?
You know, I did this 40 years ago. Who in this industry was doing anything like this 40 years ago?
Right.
Wow.
79, baby. 79.
79. Were you in New York City in 1977? Did you grow up in New York City?
Well, I didn't grow up in it. We had an apartment in New York City, but we also had like a ranch in upstate New York.
Okay.
A farm and stuff like that. But yeah, we I was in the city all the time. I was coming back and forth, and then I moved into the city when I was 14.
Okay, because that was, as you know, 1977, the craziest year that I remember in my life. That 77 in New York, the blackout and everything, it was...
Well, also, the really craziest time was Studio 54, which I was there all the time.
My dad was, I've talked about it on the show, he owned a limo company and he drove the executives of CBS Records. And he was, so he was at Studio 54 a lot. Your IPCPR back room reminded me of the offices he used to take me up at in CBS Records. I walked in there and I almost was like been a time warp, just the how it looked. It was, even though it didn't have a retro look, it just reminded me of those days.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I was with CBS Records doing music back then.
Did you know Don Dempsey, Ron Alexenberg?
No, Alan Levy was the president of CBS, and okay. I couldn't really do music in the States, but I was doing rap music.
Wow.
And at that time, you know, they weren't really playing the rap music in the United States, and to really be able to do something with it, you had to, like, be overseas. Because my lyrics were so vulgar and profane that, you know, in Europe, they couldn't even understand what I was saying. So it was a lot easier for me to be played on the air.
Right.
So I ended up going with Alan Levy, who was the president of CBS in France.
Okay. Nice. So, you know, back to the cigars for a minute. What was this first condition cigar like that you made?
Basically, it was really... like the Shorty and the Royale and the Sun Fu Ka. So if anybody who's out there wants to go grab like a Sun Fu Ka, you get the Sun Fu Ka. That's really what the classic, my classic thing. Whereas I created those blends and that conditioning when I was 15 years old.
That's incredible. That's incredible. What, give us a little idea of like what types of, what types of flavors do you get from those cigars?
You get deliciousness and yummy.
Yummy.
And then a little bit of mix of that hint of yummy deliciousness. You know, I'm not the guy to like go ahead and give the flavor notes.
No.
I think that everything is really based on the personal taste. And like everybody tastes different things. So, you know, it's like I understand people, the people who can taste notes. But for me, I don't want to put that into people's heads. I'd rather people like kind of feel out their own flavor palette and their own mind.
Sure.
And let them kind of like feel that out.
Totally fair there. So you started making these cigars in late 70s. Well, next question is, how did you start selling these cigars?
Actually, you know, I didn't make any money on this. I had a third partnership in a modeling agency and a casting company for motion pictures and commercials, Broadway. So I wasn't really making any money. This was a passion for me, a hobby. And the actual stores would sell them to other people and they would just sell them as white boy cigars. And it was probably about a year or 2 years later before people started to know my name. Before that, it was just all white boy.
Right. Amazing. And so, you know, did this eventually become a, you know, did this become more of a full-time business at some point? I know you were involved in a lot of other things. We'll be touching on this.
It really didn't become full-time until like, okay, so I was doing a TV show on Fox for a while. And it wasn't until I had to really make a choice. Am I going to go into the cigar business or I'm going to continue to do this show? Because the show was taking up all my time. I was doing cigars and selling them at the time, but it was very, you know, like pretty much underground, like still. And that was like in the 80s. And then the late 80s, early 90s, I was really kind of trying to like figure out, what am I going to do? Am I going to make this a full-time gig? And then in the 90s, you know, I had a partner who was like, basically said, hey, you know, you really need to make this into your full-time gig. Mm-hmm. And make a choice between the TV show and And I made the choice to go into the cigars. At that time, we had some pretty big endorsement deals with the TV show, so we could have really gone super big with it. We had four seasons on Fox that did pretty well. So we could have gone on and done this really big, but I chose to go into the cigar thing.
Lars, the bands on these cigars, are these the same bands that the original ones had, or similar style, or are they different?
Similar. They're very similar. But you know, we're still working on everything. Everything's kind of being still developed. So we're going to be doing a little bit more development on the bands and how we're going to have it set up. And you'll see that in the next year. We'll have some really cool stuff going.
The style of the bands, though, remind me of going into, like, Greenwich Village in 19...
Yeah.
That's exactly what I looked at that. The posters in Greenwich Village. And when I looked at these, I'm like, it was immediately struck me as that.
Absolutely. And remember, I grew up in that world in New York. So, yeah. You know, it was all about the village. And it was all about growing up in that whole... You know, I was, like, kind of an Upper East Side of village kid. So... and. Hanging out in the Tribeca area and skateboarding all the time. I'm still skateboarding today. Now I skateboard, you know, like I try to skateboard pretty regularly. So it's like, you know, it's funny.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Staten Island when I was in I was in Brooklyn. I was born in Brooklyn. My teens I spent in Staten Island and we would take the ferry over. My high school was right by the ferry. We would take the ferry over after high school was over, and we go up to the record stores in Greenwich Village. And at the time, that's how you bought all your albums, and you got all your good import albums and things like that. So when I saw the packaging on this, it just blew me away because it took me right back to that.
What kind of music did you listen to back then?
You're going to laugh. I listened probably to more disco than I would have, that most people would admit to.
No, I would not laugh. I listened to disco too. Dude, we grew up in that era.
Yeah.
In fact, the funny thing is that I knew a lot of the punk bands. Like, I personally knew a bunch of guys and stuff. And that they would play at CBGBs or wherever. And I would be like, yeah, I'm not going. I know.
Right.
I like disco. I really did. I love disco. That's the kind of music I like to listen to. I like that old school, like, reggae stuff, like Michigan and Smiley, Redman. Or Yellow Man, sorry. I like that stuff.
A lot of my family, we were in Bay Ridge when we were in Brooklyn, and that's when they were filming Saturday Night Fever, which was a movie that was filmed in our neighborhood, in that Bay Ridge neighborhood. So you couldn't help but want to see that movie, want to hear that music at the time. And that's how I got into it. And then my dad, driving for the record company, it did widen my music taste. So I do like a lot of classic rock as well on top of that. But I would say, you know, I will probably listen to more disco than most people my age would admit to.
Yeah, I think that you're right about that. But I love the disco stuff. I really do. I was into a lot of different kind of music stuff, but I think that was like fun. Did you go out to the clubs back then?
Yeah, I mean, we had an area of Staten Island called Bay Street. And that's where I would go to the clubs. I was getting into Danceteria at a very young age, I'll admit that.
Yeah, I was going into Danceteria too. I remember going the first night the Limelight was open. I remember when that was
I went there
open.
Too, yeah.
And they threw a huge birthday party and paid for the whole thing. Free cake and free alcohol all night long for my birthday. You know, there was Danceteria, there was the Palladium, remember that?
Uh-huh.
There was Xenons, remember Xenons?
I remember Xenons,
Yeah, nobody really remembers that. That's like, that's old school New Yorkers, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, but I was, you know, at the time too, the age, the alcohol age was 18. I was close to 18, and I had a lot of facial hair. So I was able, I didn't have really a lot of problems like passing for 18 is what I'll just say.
Cool.
So I was getting into Danceteria below 18.
I never drank. So, I mean,
And we always went dressed well there. So, I never had a problem per se.
Yeah, I knew most of the doormen knew me. So I didn't really have any issues. And when you own a modeling agency, it's kind of easy to do shit. And then, you know, also being involved in the music biz, you just develop connections with people that just kind of, you get into places.
So wait, but back up, modeling agency. What's that about? you gotta tell us that one.
I was the third partner in a modeling agency in Manhattan.
Oh wow.
Yeah, Summa Models. And then I owned a third in a casting company called About Faces.
Nice.
Yeah. And we casted for motion pictures and commercials and Broadway shows and stuff like that. I enjoyed it. That was a good business for me. But I wasn't like the people, you know, that was my real job, was the fashion business. But I really was not like the other people. I saw so many people in the fashion business. They did tons of drugs and drank all the time, and they were just in it to hook up with girls or guys or whatever. And I just was not that dude. I was just doing it for business.
Right.
To make money. I didn't hook up with the girls because I wasn't into doing that. I was into making money. And I considered it a business, and I didn't want to be playing around in my office. You know what I mean? That was my office.
Right. Right.
So when I was young, I was kind of a good looking kid. So I had a lot of models where always these girls were like on top of it wanting to hook up. And I had some relationships with some models, but they were already super successful. So I had nothing to do with helping them become successful.
Right.
They were already the biggest successful models. And then I had no problem having relationships with them. I didn't have anything to do with their career.
Sure. Studio 54. I mean, so you said you've been there. I had never been to Studio 54.
I was there all the time.
So the stories are true. You were picked to go in there, right? You literally had to be handpicked to go in there.
Listen, they knew me so well. They literally pushed the crowd apart when they saw me a block away. And this was my deal when I was at that time in New York. If the bouncers didn't recognize me at least from a block or half a block away, I'd turn around and leave. Mm-hmm. If they didn't come out of the thing and push the crowd apart so that I would come in, I wouldn't even go in. So about a half a block from the entrance, if they hadn't recognized me, I just walked away.
Wow.
Yeah. Because it means you don't have good bouncers.
Right.
If you are going to try to be cheap and save money and hire bad bouncers, you didn't know the right crowd to come in, then I didn't want to be there that night.
Right.
So if the bouncers recognized me right away and they saw, then okay, they had good bouncers that night and I would go in. And that was it.
I got one more question there. The
interesting thing that most people don't realize is that celebrities, most of the time, if you weren't like a top celebrity and also in the whole fashion community and scene, they weren't going to let you into the club. It didn't matter how famous you were. It didn't matter how much money you had. You could come there with $20,000 to give to a doorman. They're going to laugh at you and not let you in because the good doorman didn't let people in for money. They only let the right people in. Now, they may have tipped them afterwards, but it was never for money. It was you had to have the right crowd in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you had to know the right nights to go. It was really like a Sunday to Tuesday, possibly Wednesday, were the people who were in the scene. Nobody really went out on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday night because that was Bridget Tom.
Right.
Right, right, yeah. Right, yes. Did you ever meet Steve Rebell?
Yeah, lots of times.
How I mean, everything, he was kind of a bizarre character from what I've heard.
Everybody was like really nice to me. So I didn't really, I never had any problems.
That's good.
I was well known there. So
yep.
I never had any issues. And people were cool, man. You know, it's just like, it becomes like that's your friends. You know what I mean? That's your buddies. Everybody knows you. You know them. It's just that's where you hang out. And I enjoyed New York. New York was a fun time.
Yep.
And the funnier part about it is that I'm one of the only people that I know who went through that time and that club scene, everything. I never did any drugs. I never drank.
Yeah.
I probably wasn't as deep into the scene as you were, but I've kind of stayed clean. I'll just say that.
Oh, that's good. That's very good.
Yeah, that's kind of when you were in this New York scene, Were you guys smoking cigars? Were the cigars a part of the club scene back then? I'm trying to, because I wasn't a cigar person back then.
Yeah, cigars were not part of the scene. So, like, if you smoke cigars, I smoked cigars kind of privately and with friends, because if you, like, walked around smoking cigars, people looked at you like you were the devil. It was, like, considered the most evil thing if you were a terrible person if you smoked cigars. That was really what you were looked at. And so, you know, I didn't try to do that. The funniest part about it is, back then, do you remember macrobiotics? Remember that diet that everybody was on, macrobiotics?
Yes, yes.
People were doing heroin and cocaine and whatever, and then eating macrobiotics. Ooh, don't eat beef, don't eat a burger, but they would be doing heroin.
Good grief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got one question from the chat room from Ed. He wants to know if you knew Johnny Russo.
Johnny Russo?
Yep. I don't know who it is.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
And let me just preface this by saying, I can't remember people's names at all. Everybody who knows me knows I am the worst person at remembering names, including my own sisters. I just can't remember names. Very difficult.
No problem. We're talking to Lars Teetons here of Lars Teetons Cigars. Aaron, do you have anything on these early days you maybe want to hit into?
No, I mean, I grew up on the West Coast, so I'm not even
– Yeah, I know. I went down the rabbit hole with that.
It's fascinating listening to you guys though, talk about this, because it's just stuff I've seen in movies and on TV and stuff like that. So it's fascinating to listen to.
I did spend a little time in Rancho Palos Verdes.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I that was a really funny scene. And the one thing I can say about the West Coast and the East Coast, so, like, I was skateboarding all the time. And all the skateboarders on the West Coast, they were wearing, like, OP shorts. Remember the corduroy shorts and the OP T-shirts and stuff and have all the tropical kind of themes to it? Well, that's the kind of thing that everybody on the West Coast did. On the East Coast, us, like, skater punks, we would wear suits and ties and loafers and stuff like that. That was the funny part.
That's awesome. Rancho Palos Verdes.
That's Steve. That's right behind me. Steven.
Hey, Steve.
Hi, baby.
Oh. Rancho Palos Verdes, that's outside of L.A., right?
Yes, south of L.A. That's,
it's like on a peninsula area. I was there. That's why I'm remembering it.
Yep, and then it's got these cliffs that look out over the ocean. It's really beautiful.
There were, like, beautiful homes there. I think I remember going through this area with my wife.
It is really beautiful. Beautiful area. I love that.
So you mentioned there was a choice. You decided to go into the cigar business, right? Was this right around the time that the boom hit?
You know, it was a little bit before the boom.
Okay, so the boom comes along, and obviously that does a lot for you as well.
Sure. It did. You know, it just happened to be that I was kind of already established as in manufacturing and already started selling to stores. So, and it was difficult because think about it. My packaging was the first kind of new modern packaging. Mm-hmm. Nobody did any cigars with that kind of packaging on it. Nobody did those kind of radical boxes. Nobody had done it. I mean, now it's just standard stuff that people are doing, but nobody had ever done it before. So people were afraid of it. And it was a lot of conservative people that were just like, we can't have this in the shop. This is never going to sell. You know, nobody's going to smoke these kind of cigars. And then it became now the standard thing that everybody's doing.
Tons
of companies trying to, you know.
Yes.
On that ride.
So you use the word conditioned. And we hear the word, sometimes we hear words thrown out like infused. We hear words come out like flavored, but you use the word conditioned. Well, what differentiates these?
So the reason I created the word infused was because I don't do any infusion. And I just wanted it to be confusing.
Okay.
And it happened to be that, you know, certain people who I will not name were in the room when I actually created that. And I'm sure everybody here knows. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, we were friends at one point, and they heard me use the infused term, and then they ran with it. But I only created it just because I don't do infusion, and I don't infuse anything, really. So I thought, oh yeah, that's going to be misleading, and I'll just use that word because it's not anything I really do. So
right.
It's a better way to keep it secret and confuse people.
Exactly. No. So you've had success with the cigars. You never really went away, but no. You kind of went into the background for a little while. What kind of happened during that stage where you kind of went into the background?
It was a business decision that we had made. We decided to do our sales in a different way in different parts of the world. So we were selling a lot in Russia, Eastern Europe, Africa, and we were putting a lot of our production out there.
Okay.
But not a small percentage we continued to do in the U.S. And, we were never running after the inexpensive part of the cigar industry. We were always a high-end cigar. So, and we'll be coming out with a bunch more of the high-end brands that I've been doing for years. So that was really the staple of our business. Our business was never low-end. It was usually our average price, even back then, $25, $30 cigars and up.
Back then, that was high. There's no question about that.
Nobody had ever even tried to sell cigars that high. It was not heard of.
Yep. So there's a point where now you've kind of resurged this year. I don't want to say come back because you never really went away. What kind of led to that decision to kind of resurge?
There was a number of companies I was in negotiations with and in talks with for a long time. One company for like 12 years, another for a few years, many different people that I was in negotiations with. But, before I was going to sign a contract, one of my business associates said, hey, you should give a call to Alan, because I think that Alec Bradley and Alan would be the company that would really suit you best. And you've talked about Alan so many times, and you obviously feel really comfortable with him. And I just never got around to it. But then Alan contacted me, and I was just like, oh, damn, I should have called him. And then Alan and I started talking, and I really get along with them very, very well. And it felt like, that was what I really wanted to do. And even right before I was about to sign my deal with another company, and I was already been in negotiations with Alan and talking to him for about a year, it was the least lucrative out of all the people, but it felt the best. And having Alec and Bradley, his two sons, be able to carry on this tradition. And Ralph, who I love Ralph, and he's such an honest guy and just positive, strong part of my whole part of the resurgency that I'm doing now. And Alan on my team, this is where I wanted to be. And I knew that I didn't want to do this. And I felt like in my heart, I couldn't do this with any other person except Alan. That's why.
Nice.
And I love the guy. And he's family for me. And that whole company, everybody there, Jonathan Lipson, Michael Sirota, they're all just like family. I love these guys.
I saw the videos that you guys shot down in the offices, right? And we were also at the media reception. And, at first when we heard that Alan was going to be partnering with you, we almost looked at it. It was a very odd – no one would have expected that, right? But, after going to the media party, after spending I spent some time at the Alec Bradley offices, there's no doubt in watching those videos, I see the connection with you guys. It's really a good thing.
I love them. Yeah, I love those guys. We're really close. We're like family.
Yeah.
And listen, there's a lot of people I'm really close to within the cigar industry, and they're very supportive of me, and they're awesome people. I just had that connection with them. I felt like that was for this journey. This is where I wanted to be, and this is the people I wanted to be with. And, I trust Alan. He's a good dude.
No, he definitely is. So you made what was kind of some of the plans? What were some of the plans to do the relaunch? You didn't bring back everything into the forefront per se, but you brought back a series of brands.
We're just going to bring back certain products at a time, and you know we're going to be continuing to put more products into the marketplace. You really want to reach out to the bigger part of the masses, which I'd really never done. I stayed in very high-end exclusive shops mostly. We focused on our bigger ticket cigars where they were way more expensive, like the $110 sticks, the $100 sticks, the $180 stick. You know, that was where our focus was. We didn't even really care about doing the mass market part. But I would really like to be able to put this into people's hands and let everybody enjoy it at a reasonable price. And that's what we're trying to do. And we're really, I think everything's going great now. Everything is going great. I've been received so well. I've been, for the last like month, I've been on the road, hitting places all over the country. And, you know, people are remembering me from back in the day. And lots of people have been coming to some of my music shows that I've been doing. And I'm still out there doing some music. And it's pretty fun.
Yep.
And you know, and there are also a lot of people who bought my bags for years, mm-hmm. And didn't even know I was doing cigars. So it was like, oh wow, he's doing cigars. You know, they got older and started smoking cigars or getting a little into it. They come out and see me. But you know, I've been doing bags even longer than I've been doing cigars. And my spices, I've been doing more. So the spices have become very popular.
We'll love spices.
I'm your biggest fan.
I love that. Oh yeah.
What I'll say about this is this seasoned salt, if you have something that just doesn't taste flavorful, put some of this on. It's like magic dust, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's so good.
It really is. What is that scorpion pepper in here? There's something called scorpion.
So I put in like Trinidad scorpion peppers. I put Bootyokia, which is ghost pepper, Carolina Reapers, 16 different kinds of habaneros. That's the same spice, by the way, that's on the tip of the cigar for the SS you're smoking.
Which I'm smoking.
And it's one of my favorite cigars. I love that cigar. So let me just say, I would be smoking in this room, except I'm at a cigar store. And right in this room, the cigar lounge just kind of has people in it. It'd be noisy and loud. And this has a vent that goes into the humidor. So I'm not smoking any cigars in here because I don't want it to get in the humidor. And, you know, I'm trying to be respectful of their place. So it's going to be.
Yeah.
I'm going to chill out with smoking.
That's totally understandable.
I smoke about two or three of those every day. I love that stuff.
It's so unique. You get that pepper right up, but then it there's a sweetness, like a watermelon like sweetness you get on that, which is just I really enjoy it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was like, Jonathan goes, which one do you want? Like, SS. He sent me a whole bunch, you gotta send me some SS. I smoked all the ones I had.
Oh yeah, it's the best, man.
Yeah.
I gotta say a shout out to Lindy. Hey, baby, love you.
and the reception, Lars, seemed very, very good. Like everyone was, like you said it. The market, I saw at the trade show. Everyone was excited to see you. There was a very good reception for the cigars at the media party. I think a lot of us who hadn't tried your stuff were really surprised by it.
Yeah, and owners of other cigar companies were sending their own customers to me, which is pretty cool. I mean, that goes to show you the cigar industry is an awesome place.
Yeah.
It really is. And it was so many of the owners out there of other cigar brands were like so excited about this and sending their customers to me. That just goes to kind of show you how good people are in this industry. It's really a wonderful business, and the people are really good people. At the end of the day, it's a really cool family. We may have different companies and everything, but it really is like a family thing.
And the Alec Bradley sales team is selling your product, they seem to have really gotten behind it as well. I mean, yes. That's that part. I mean, I can tell you from going into the media part, that was my observation of it.
And I've been on the road with a bunch of their reps, and their reps are awesome. I love those guys. They're great. And yep. We're really doing some cool stuff. And I really wanted to go out on the road with them because I'd never really gone out and seen cigar stores, and I just wanted to do that. I thought it would be cool. And, you know, I talked to Alan and told him I really want to go out and meet face to face with these cigar store owners and the customers. And he was cool with it, so we just set it up, man. And I'm loving it. It's great. I hadn't done it before. I think it's a really good thing to go out there and meet people face to face.
In this time where cigars, we'll say flavored cigars, and we'll put all the categories under there, including conditioned, they're under attack by the FDA. Why get back and do this right now? Is it just, do you love it that much that you just, hey, let's just go with it?
Yeah, I really do. I do. You know, I've got other businesses, but I love this business. This is something I really love. And, you know, we'll see what happens with the FDA.
Yep. That's, I think, all you can do at this point. And I mean, like you said, you have a nice international following with these too.
Right. That's yep. Exactly right.
Yep. Aaron, anything you have on this part?
I want to talk about the conditioning, not necessarily the process, but kind of the way that he goes about kind of creating these blends. So if you're ready, we can get to go down that road. So Lars, what's the process and how you come up with these combinations to create these blends? Is it just a lot of experimentation, or are you pretty much already knowing what you want to put together and it's pretty simple to put them together?
You just hit the nail on the head, Aaron. I really pretty much have it in my head already. And I'm so used to doing this. And I've been a chef for a long time, so I cook all the time, and I create food products all the time. Mm-hmm. So creating cigars and blending is second nature to me, and I really enjoy it. So it just becomes the thing that I enjoy doing, that I love doing, and I'm that's my thing.
Right. Yeah, we had Alan Rubin on the show, and he was kind of talking about the process that you go through and some of the components that you use. And he said that there was this one piece where it was a very small container of whatever it is, but it was super expensive to put this together. So it was a very unique component to these cigars. Yeah, how do you come across some of these things?
They did not realize how much money it was going to cost. Or my standards. My standards are very high.
Right.
And Ralph can tell you, because he's with me all the time when I'm doing this. And, you know, I just won't allow low standards when I'm in the factory. Everything has to be up to my standards. Everything. And so I can be kind of a hard ass when I'm in there. And everything is going to be of the most pure quality and the very best you can possibly get. There's no getting anything cheap. No company in this industry would even do it. It's just too much money. It's too expensive. Nobody would want to do it. And it's a lot of work. People aren't going to want to do any of this stuff.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I can imagine, like I said, coming across Trinidad Scorpion Pepper is not something that, you know, things like that. It's not. Yeah. They're not something you're going to go into the grocery store and get. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think that that's like, you know, part of the whole thing, but you know, it's a very unique thing that I do, and no one's ever been able to copy. They've been able to try, but no one's ever able to copy it. So.
Right.
Very nice.
Too very complicated, nice. Too difficult.
Right. Some of the lines I think are really, like I said, they're just interesting stories behind the lines. Like the Cubagua, did I say that right? Cubagua? Cubagua line. I mean, that was the one that you had, you mentioned Venezuela earlier, and that was, it got its name from a chain of islands out there, right? So that was just
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and it was finally.
You did a little research on that. That's awesome.
Well, what happened? I was going to ask you that, and then you mentioned Venezuela early in the show, and I'm like, okay, why this chain of islands? I was going to ask with that.
Now you connected the dots there.
Yeah. Yeah. And
Green Island, because, like, you know, it used to be very populated. And it used to be like a part where naval ships from different countries would stop off and get food. Yep. And also pirates would stop off and get food. And
interesting.
Then, you know, 100 and something years ago, it just started to become isolated. You know, not isolated, but, you know, people left the island.
Right. Yeah.
Depopulated.
Yeah. Then the other one I think we were talking about, I think reference the grass one. That's one of the more premium ones you've released right now.
Absolutely. And that was something I created within just a couple of years of me starting. So maybe 17, 18 when I created that.
Yeah, I love the names Big and Bigger.
And it used to have medium, big, and bigger. And the funny part was I never had a small.
you just took my question away. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, no, so that was, and it was, you have a 6x60 in there. Are you a 6x60 smoker by any chance? Because you hear a lot of people say they don't like 6x60s. What kind of cigar sizes do you go to normally?
You know, my go-to sizes are really like a Lonsdale and a Petite Corona and a Corona size. I'm not really a big ring gauge smoker.
And then,
I leave the big ring gauges for the women. I'll let them smoke.
There you go.
It's fun to watch.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah, I can say. I'll smoke. They smoke it. Yeah.
I just thought of an idea for a segment, Aaron.
Okay.
Female smoking big ring gauges.
Oh. Yeah. That's a good time.
Right. Yeah. We mentioned the SS as well. Like I said, that's a very unique cigar. Like I said, it's definitely, it's a cigar. I say, give it a chance too. It's different. It had to be the most unique cigar that you had. Like I said, just the flavors I got, it truly gave you that sweet spice in there.
Yeah. It really is one of my all time favorite cigars I ever created. And, you know, I have to smoke a couple of those every day or more. It's something that's like, you know, it's just almost like addictive. It's so crazy. The taste, you know, that flavor, that taste. You know, some people, they have to have like a certain kind of, I don't know, flavored food or something, or a spice or a seasoning. And that's kind of like the thing. You know what's great with that? Is if you're eating a big steak dinner or any kind of food stuff and you smoke that cigar while you're eating, it makes everything taste great.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of even like it after dinner. Like I said, it has that, I kind of like it after dinner as well with that. And it's got a, yes, you get that pepper, but as you get into the cigar, and I'll talk a little about it when we talk about what we're smoking, it really smooths out nicely. So,
yeah, it's got a really nice flavor to it. It's great taste, and it doesn't. It's just so unique.
Yep. I know. I've heard you talk about this one as one of your. I think they're all your favorites, right? But I've heard you talk a lot about the steampunk. That's one I've seen you smoke on the videos and stuff.
Yeah, steampunk is a great cigar, and it's really a little callback of my real old school kind of style. That one, and also the Sun Fukan, man. Those are like my go-to cigars. Sun Fukan is great. That's a nice smoke. And you know, the Cubagua is a really good smoke. Even if you're not a mild smoker and you don't like flavored stuff, it's just a nice treat. It's like a little nice treat smoke. It's great. And especially like in the mornings, it's a great morning smoke.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I do agree with that as well. You mentioned
who like that Ashton kind of style, like that Churchill Ashton thing. The Sutton Place is a great stick. If you smoke the Churchill Sutton Place, you're gonna love it. I mean, if that's your profile, where you like that Churchill ash, and you will love the Someplace Churchill.
And I'm assuming that's the throwback to Manhattan, right?
Someplace. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know it, baby.
Yeah.
You know that. We're city boys, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for folks who don't know, it's a street in Manhattan. Yeah. It's a famous street in Manhattan. Yep.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I put the blue door in there. I'm going to change that up just a little bit more so you can read it easier. But that blue is like that thing for the Someplace doors.
Yeah. You mentioned the Sunfuka, and that's part of the fat line, right? Which there's kind of a different cigar for everybody in that fat line is what I've noticed. Yes, is they smoke very different, each of those.
Yes, absolutely. And they all have like a little bit of a different blend, different feel to it. And it smokes differently with different sizes. So it's unique because that's one of the lines that I have that has a mild, medium, and full all within the same line.
Yeah, I remember that the Sunfuka, I had that at the media party, and that was a pretty full cigar when I smoked it.
Absolutely. That is a pretty full cigar.
That's the Lonsdale, correct? That's the one that's the Lonsdale?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I just want to try that one right, yeah.
And I love that cigar. And that size, man. That size is just like, it's like a perfect size cigar. For me, it is. I love it.
And then I think the other one we did.
Baby.
Yeah. There you go. The one we didn't mention was Siri D, and that was that's a more bolder line from what I remember smoking that one as well.
That's right. That is right. And, you know, that has got like a lot of – that's also a full body, and it's got a lot of – it's just a very – that's a cool smoke, man. When you smoke it, you're just like, oh, good stuff.
Very good. Very good. Aaron, any questions on the lines here?
I don't think so. I'm ready to chat about what we're.
Yeah, I say, Lars, we're going to chat about what we just smoked, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So I want to mention that what we have smoked is sponsored by Tailored Smoke, located in the heart of downtown Charlotte's epicenter. Tailored Smoke is your one-stop shop for a tailored smoking experience. Aaron, what are you smoking tonight?
I am just wrapping up the SS as well, and this is my first time smoking it. And it's an interesting cigar. I mean, that spiciness that you get is, it's very nice. I mean, it's not like a synthetic spice. It's very, very natural tasting. And it's at a pretty good level. I mean, it's a nice spiciness, but it's not overpowering. And you kind of get that when you first initially, you know, light it up. But then as you're smoking along, it's kind of just kind of like enhancing things a little bit as you go along. And then you get some nice sweetness from the cigar. And the retrohale is quite smooth. And it just, the cigar gives you like kind of a different experience on each draw. Like you kind of get little different components and as you progress, you kind of pick out some other things. It's a pretty interesting cigar. I'm actually enjoying it quite a bit.
I love that description, Aaron. That's
Thank
awesome.
Yeah. And I think I mentioned, I just wrapped up, I had actually smoked two of these already. I smoked one before the SS. Look, the SS is a cigar. When you light that thing up, you're gonna get that habanero pepper right out of the gate, and you're gonna get this watermelon sweetness as well, and like the two combine, and they actually play very well together. But then the cigar is gonna settle down, and it's gonna deliver as you start smoking it more subtle notes of that spice and that sweetness. Almost, and I mentioned there's almost a little bit of a creaminess and a smoothness for the rest of that cigar. So you're going to get that blast up front, but then, like I said, the cigar, and I kind of enjoyed the blast, but I even enjoy it as that cigar progresses as well. It's a cigar, I think, like I said, smoke it to the end, and you get a real nice complex experience with that cigar as well.
Definitely. I like to describe that cigar, the SS. First 3 minutes you smoke it, you're feeling like, wow, I may have to go to the hospital. I might need to call an ambulance. This is too hot. And then about 5 minutes later, you're like, wow, okay, maybe I won't end up in the hospital tonight. I think I might survive this and be able to talk about it. About 10, 15 minutes later, you're like, wow, I really did survive it. The smoke is really nice now. It's all getting smooth. I can taste the tobacco. Yeah. I can't wait to get another one in my mouth.
Right. That was my reaction as well. And I talked to a couple of people. Like, they said, well, I couldn't get past. I said, if you get past it, trust me, you're gonna really, it's not going to be like that for the whole, and it was, you know, the whole cigar. And then they went back and smoked it, and they said, yeah, you're right, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. You just got to get through the first 5 minutes.
Was that intentional? Like, you wanted that? Was that what you were looking for at the beginning, to do something like that? And then just...
Yes.
Wow, that's
it'll wake up.
Yep.
did Alan what was Alan, has Alan Rubin smoked that cigar?
Yeah, yes.
And what was his reaction?
Yeah, the same kind of reaction. They all got a little nervous in the beginning.
Right, I can imagine. I can imagine. You know, it's funny. I know there's a shop owner I want to share one of these with, and I want to see what his reaction is, because I know, here's the thing. I know that he will enjoy that, the profile, once that thing smooths down. But I want to see if he can get past the first couple minutes.
I know. Once you get through that, then it's okay.
Yeah. But it's good. It's a unique cigar. You know, there's a lot of flavored and infused, whatever you want to say, in the market, but that one, like I said, it's very unique, and like I said, it's very enjoyable, and it's kind of like I said, you can have that cigar. I don't know if I'd have it waking up at 5 a.m. I haven't tried to do that, but I have had it after dinner, and it is a great cigar after dinner.
So when you wake up, if you really need to like wake up and drive someplace or go do something or whatever, you smoke that. It's better than coffee. Because that will wake you up. You'll wake up on that for sure.
You know, it's funny. I had my wife dry drawer one of those, right? And because I always have some sense, she likes a dry drawer, and she always say every cigar tastes like Barnyard, right? So I said, here, try this one. She goes, this one doesn't have Barnyard, but she goes, this is really spicy.
I love that.
So I'm going to try to have her smoke one now. That's my next goal here.
Oh, that's awesome.
See, I think there's stuff in her portfolio, though, that she would enjoy. Not a regular cigar smoker, but I think there's cigars that I could see that she would enjoy in this portfolio.
Yeah, I think the Cubagua she would enjoy, too.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Exactly. I mean, she's one who smokes like maybe 4 or 5 cigars a year. So, you know, not like 4 or 5 a day like me.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. So, all right, Lars, if we can, what I want to do is just do a word from our sponsors, and then we can get in some music. How's that sound?
That sounds awesome.
All right.
Real quick, Michael Horklotz is in the chat room. He said just to tell you hello, Lars.
No, Michael, I love him dearly, and he is one of the sexiest guys in the cigar industry.
There you go, Michael.
There you go. That's the ultimate compliment there. All right. So,
guys in New York City.
Yeah. Mike's a New York guy. That's for sure.
That's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. Mike, if you missed, you got to rewind. We had some New York stories we were talking about earlier on. I had to indulge Aaron on that for a few minutes. So thanks, Aaron.
No worries.
Once I get on New York, Aaron, I lose Aaron sometimes. I'm afraid. All right. So let's just get a word from our sponsors. The authentic Corojo leaf is one of the most robust and flavorful tobacco leaves out there. During the golden age of cigars in Cuba, it was a leaf of choice to make some of the world's greatest cigars. Because it is one of the most challenging ones to cultivate, it fell out of favor by the 1990s. In the Hamastron Valley in Honduras, Julio Araroa took on the challenge of growing Corojo from the original seeds, and in 2000, he successfully reintroduced authentic Corojo back to the market. With over 50 years' experience in the tobacco business, from growing and curing tobacco to cigar production, the JRE Tobacco Farm has been able to continue to deliver products to market with authentic Corojo. Now with JRE Tobacco Company, Julio and his son Justo bring their very own brand to market, each containing the authentic Corojo leaf. Tarascon offers a mild to medium cigar in both Connecticut and Habano wrapper. Rancho Luna is a premium medium cigar that is available in Habano and Maduro. And Aladino is available in a 100% authentic Corojo Puro, San Andres Maduro, or Ecuadorian Connecticut shade, representing the golden age of cigars from 1947 to 1961. Now available at your local retailer. Be sure to ask for JRE Tobacco, a legacy that is tasted in every draw. And by Placencia Cigars. Placencia Cigars is one of the world's leading growers of first-class tobacco, as they have been pioneers in the industry since 1865. Five generations of the Placencia family have continued the legacy in Nicaragua and Honduras. Today, the Placencia family's very own cigar line, led by CEO and master blender Nestor Andres Placencia, produces over 40 million handmade cigars each year. Placencia Cigars celebrates their Nicaraguan roots through their premium Alma series, inclusive of the complex blends of the Alma Fuerte, Alma de Campo, and the newest release, the Alma de Fuego, each harvested in the pure soils of Nicaragua. And by Cornelius and Anthony, if you're going to be wanted for something, be wanted for something great. That's what Cornelius Bailey set out to do five generations ago, and that's what Stephen Bailey is doing with Cornelius and Anthony Cigars. Using the finest tobaccos, Cornelius and Anthony brings to you Daddy Mac, Venganza, Meridian, Cornelius, Ariel, Senior E-Sugars, and the Gent and Mistress. You can find them at your local tobacconist. And by J.C. Newman Cigar Company, founded in 1895 by Julius Caesar Newman, J.C. Newman Cigar Company is the oldest family-owned premium cigar maker in America. For four generations and 124 years, J.C. Newman has been handcrafting many of the world's finest cigars. J.C. Newman is headquartered in an iconic 109-year-old cigar factory in Ybor City, National Historic Landmark District in Tampa, Florida. At this factory, known as El Rahul, J.C. Newman rolls premium cigars by hand in hand-operated antique cigar machines. The J.C. Newman Pensa factory is the second largest in Nicaragua, and it's where Brickhouse, Perla de Mar, El Baton, and Quorum cigars are hand-rolled. J.C. Newman's Diamond Crown, Maximus, Julius Caesar, and Black Diamond cigars are handmade by Tabacalera A. Fuente in the Dominican Republic. With longtime partners, the Arturo Fuente family, the Newmans have founded the Cigar Family Charitable Foundation, which supports low-income families in the Dominican Republic with education, healthcare, vocational training, and clean water. Visit jcnewman.com to learn more. And by Alec Bradley Cigars. Alec Bradley is a family company. Alan Rubin named the company after his two sons, Alec and Bradley, when they were just little tykes. Now they're all grown up, working alongside their dad, making the best damn cigars you've ever smoked. Join the family. Try one today. Learn more at alecbradley.com. So we're going to get into our Alec Bradley Live True segment. And Lars, this is where we kind of take a little step back from some of the heavy cigar talk, although we went a little into some other areas beforehand. And, you know, obviously one thing that you are known – I mean, you're known for your leather making, you're known for your culinary arts, and we talked a bunch about your music right now. We were talking about the idea of having you play a little guitar on the show today. Can I make a request?
Sure.
Can we get work?
Of course we can.
Okay. Give me a little idea. What was the background for doing that song Work?
It was just like I was writing some songs that were like kind of more current and more updated, and I just thought that was like a, you know, I kind of went into it. It has my flavor to it.
When did you write that song?
2 years ago.
It's a newer one. Okay.
And then if I'm going to do two songs, can I do Big 44 first and then I'll do Work?
That is totally fine with me. So tell us a little about Big 44 before we get into that one.
Okay. I love this song. I wrote this song probably about 20 something years ago.
Wow.
It was like one of those songs that I think is like still holds up to being like, I play it all the time and I do it for young people all the time, and it still stays kind of current.
Awesome. All right. So, Lars, are you ready?
I'm ready. Baby.
All right. So, here we go. This is Lars Keaton Live. This is, I believe, not only a primetime first, it may be a cigar podcast first. I don't know if we've had a live, a mini live concert on here, but you get it. So, and someone can fact check me on that, but I'm going to say it unless we're wrong. So, Lars, take it away.
Well, you can tell by the wheel spinning, I'm a little harder. I'm so hard, I'm lost with barbed wire. Ruler of the street empire. Won't you step and then you retire? Got to get you dated, got your body on fire. One, two holes, do it like a ladder. Dudes wanna step,
gonna catch a flyer, scoop a wake up, find yourself in hellfire. I don't give a fuck no more. Banging at your jaw with a big butter bow. Come on, money, let's get it on street walls. Cutting at your dudes, you will gun like so. I don't give a fuck no more. Banging at your jaw with the big butter bow. Come on, money, let's get it on street walls. Cutting at your dudes, you will gun like so. Yeah, I'm bad B, not me, stop bad G. Not me, cook up some brains. Not me, ain't no pain. Not me, yeah, you that dude, I was starting to trip. You that dude, I was pounding first clear. You that dude, steal the paper from the pace. I flip that cake 10 times before I take a taste. I don't give a fuck no more. Banging at your jaw with the big butter bow. Come on, money, let's get it on the street walls. Cutting at your dudes, you a gun like so. I don't give a fuck no more. Banging at your jaw with the big butter bow. Come on, money, let's get it on the street walls. Cutting at your dudes, you a gun like so. Black street mayors, fair black Tims. I'm a home invader, so a rock black rims. 3 in the morning, up the taste of my steel. So much blood I had to use a black pill, yeah. Put the blows up in the thighs of rich. They got the extra bag to put the loot away. If you think you're gonna get my paper on the low, I turn your ass like a $2 hoe, yeah. I don't give a fuck no more. Banging at your door with a big 44. Come on, money, let's get it on street walls. Cutting at your dudes, use my gun like a saw. I don't give a fuck no more. Banging at your door with the big 44. Come on, money, let's get it on street walls. Cutting at your dudes, use my gun like a saw. I don't give a fuck no more. Banging at your door with the big 44. Come on, money, let's get it on street walls. Cutting at your dudes.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Nice.
That was awesome, Lars.
Yes.
And so I can do work next.
Yeah.
And if people want to listen to it on YouTube, you can go there under, just do a search. I don't even know what my YouTube account's name is, but you do a search for Lars Seaton's at work, you should be able to.
Yep, that's how I found it. Yep.
All right, here we go. Here, let me just tune up quick.
No problem. This is no problem at all. We're here with Lars Teaton. He's giving us a mini concert here live on the primetime show.
Put in the work, cavalry book, so dangerous. I said now first, you gotta put in the work, cavalry book, so dangerous. Well, I'm that cowboy in the caddy, the police, they trying to bag me, got that sneeze, got that cheese. We got everything you need, So when you need someone to raise, baby, blood up in the face, I'm that cowboy. Cowboy. I got the fried chicken and the cornbread. Baby, got the fat ass and five to head, baby. Fold me up in the bag like a bed sugar. Your legs around me like a pressure cooker. Feeling you so sweet like a bottle of chocolate. Smoking cigar and drink some latte. Getting down with your head in a groove. Patching up the jerk or to the new country. But gotta put in the work. Cabo River, so dangerous. I said not first. You gotta put in the work. Cabo River, so dangerous. Cowboy in the caddy, the police say trying to bag me. Got that seat, got that trees. We got everything you need, so if you need someone to raise, baby, blood up in the face, like that cowboy. Cowboy. Toast water fell to the sky. Your eyes looking like the 4th of July. Show your girl where the heart is. Ring fingers where the rock is. Still working them lips out. Says my love is pouring out. I'm in ecstasy being next to you. Getting it up because you love me too. Well, first, you gotta put in the work. Cowboy River. So dangerous. First, you gotta put in the work. Cowboy River, so dangerous. Well, I'm that cowboy in the caddy. The police, they're trying to bag me. Got that seeds, got that trees. We got everything you need. So if you need someone to raise, baby, blood up in the face, like that cowboy. Cowboy. Back road flow like a mudslide. Tractor on the like a ride and glide. Fold big in the bag like a bed sugar. Do legs around me like a pressure cooker. Rock chicken and the cornbread ain't ribbon. Got that fat ass in the box my head, baby. So far to the sky. Rise looking like the 4th of July, say first. You gotta put in the work. Yeah, Cowboy River, so dangerous. I said now first, you gotta put in the work. Cowboy River, so dangerous. Well, I'm that cowboy in the caddy. They try, baby, got that cheese, got that juice. We got everything you need. So if you need someone to raise, baby, blood up in the face, blind that cowboy. Cowboy.
Fantastic.
Okay. Fantastic.
Thank you, Lars.
Thank you, Lars. We really do appreciate that.
Well, there's a little bit of that.
That's awesome. Great. That's awesome. We do definitely do. I mean, do you play? How often do you play live?
We do shows pretty often. So it's it's pretty cool, man. It's a good time. We're doing a bunch of shows at cigar lounges, but then I also play clubs and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're based in the Pocono area now, right? Or I should say the Lehigh Valley.
Yeah, Lehigh Valley area.
Yeah, so do you play a lot around that area?
not so much, but I play some Jersey a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more southern. Pennsylvania area, but yeah, I'm going to be playing a lot more, and I'll be doing shows around the country. So
nice.
Yeah, there was a request from the chat room about you forming an all-star band with some people in the cigar business. So,
nice.
Yeah, so that's good. We breathe. Yeah.
Yeah, there are some really good musicians in the cigar world, you know.
Yep, no, it's true. I mean, you go back, Ernesto Perez Carrillo Jr. is a drummer. I believe Michael Hercott's played in a band as well. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean,
Pete Johnson,
Pete Johnson. Yeah. But the music you do, it's very positive music, is what I've noticed too. It has a very positive feel to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's a refreshing thing to hear.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, all right, Aaron. Any
on the interview, dude? I feel more. I love interview stuff. But, you know, I like to do like more of a conversation kind of thing.
Right.
Yep.
And I feel, you know, more that's like that gets where we're all like talking about stuff. We had a little bit more of that in this. You know, we're talking about New York and talking about all the stuff. It was a little bit more conversational, which I love that.
Yeah, no, and that's good too. And anyway, obviously we struck a medium that I could have probably talked to you for about 8 hours on that, which I'm sure when I see you, we will be talking for 8 hours on that.
Absolutely.
I didn't really. I knew there was some New York connection, but I didn't realize to the extent. I didn't realize how much time you had spent there too. So and it was like I said. I think we're about the same age, you and I. So, yeah. So it was. Like I said, I just enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, it was a great time, man. It was a great time to be in New York, and it was a great time to like be doing all the creative things that you were doing. You know, I started doing rap music before rap music was rap music. I started out like DJing little parties and stuff, and I was only like 13 years old when I go do my little thing like that and doing other music stuff. But really what got me rapping was because when I would play any parties, DJing stuff, you had to hire an MC. You only got maybe 40 to 60 bucks as a DJ at night. And if you had to hire an MC, that was about $20, $25. Well, that was like half or more than half of your money.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do this myself. No. Okay, I'll do that. No.
Nice. When you're saying rap too, like I know we had this conversation with someone online. There's a difference between rap and hip hop. I mean, so I always say that hip hop has rap elements in it, but rap was something I remember in the early 80s that was coming out. It was a style that, you know, this was before hip hop. It got integrated into hip hop.
Absolutely. So in the old days of BLS, remember that? The radio station?
WBLS 107.5.
Exactly. And yep. So the old DJ who coined the phrase rap music was my landlord. I was renting an apartment from him.
Oh, nice.
And he was really calling me a rapper, insulting me, not like being nice to me. So I was doing rap music. I was like playing parties and he was really emceeing at the time. And he was like, Lars, you're not really a talent. You're not really a musician. You're a rapper. Because, you know, guys hang out on the corner rapping with each other.
Right.
So, called me like I'm a rapper. I'm just like rapping about stuff. He didn't. He was doing it really to insult me. Really, the point of the phrase, where it came from.
Yeah.
And he was like not making that as a compliment.
Yeah. That's...
So that first song, Big 44. You know, it's I'm doing it in a different style now. This is more of the newer kind of style of. Like how, you know, the modern kind of trap music is, where you're more singing it than
a little more stripped down, right? Yeah.
Originally, it was done like a little differently. So it was, when you tell by the way I spit, I'm a little harder. I'm so hard, I floss with barbed wire. Ruler of the street empire. One chance to step, but then you're retired. Got to educate, catch your body on fire. 1-2 hours, do it like a ladder. You just want to step. Gonna catch a pliers, keep wake up, find yourself in hellfire. I don't get fucked out, my banging at your back with the big 5-5. Come on, money, let's get it on straight wires. Cutting at your digs, you're gonna lack style. So that was like how
okay.
originally.
So nice. Wow. Yeah, that was nice.
I kind of changed that into this, which is like more of the trap sound.
Right.
The modern, younger sound of rap.
Yeah, and you also mentioned you were around the punk scene as well.
Yeah, I was. And you know, I had a little band called Precious 69 that was like a more of like, it was like a punk metal band for a while. And I even did a jazz act. If you go look up Larsen's Jazz, you'll hear some of my jazz tracks on YouTube. But, I just played all sorts of different stuff. I like playing different kinds of music. I was always into it. And reggae and, you know, everything. It's just fun music.
That's incredible.
Right now, my new music I'm coming up, it's going to be like a mix between trap and reggae tone.
Okay. Interesting.
When I do it acoustically, it just comes out a little bit more with a little bit of a country flair to it, mm-hmm. but it's still kind of trap. Modern kind of trap and country flair.
Right. Exactly.
Which is typical from a New York city kid.
Right, exactly. Who are some of the artists that maybe influenced you? Some of the maybe more artists that are popular. Did you have influence from anyone with that?
Really, I try not to even listen to music most of the time. So when I do listen to music, it's mostly modern trap stuff. But you know. I would say some of the people that I kind of like at this point is like Splurge, Comethazine. There's a Big Baby Scumbag. He's great. Okay. Yeah, you got to listen to the song Big Baby Scumbag, and he does a song called Dale Earnhardt. It's so good. I love it. He's great. So I like trap. I like listening to that kind of music.
Yeah, and again, you know, there was so many artists on that New York scene, too, that were, you know, I listened to growing up as well. You know, there's a lot of, like, who really didn't make it big, but they were known in the New York circles, you know. So, Garland Jeffries is one that I like. He's not a very popular name, but he's an artist I always liked in New York. So, there was always a hotbed of music in New York, too.
And New York Dolls, that guy became, the lead singer became, like, an actor.
Yeah. True.
Pretty famous.
Yeah. Too. Very true.
I loved him in Scrooge. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
He was a taxi driver in Scrooge. Oh, my God. That was so great. Bill Murray. Loved that movie.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite Bill Murray movies, actually.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Me too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big Bill Murray guy.
That guy was a lead singer in the punk band New York Dolls.
Interesting.
Amazing, yeah.
So cool.
It's cool. Yeah. All right, Aaron, anything else you want to hit with Laura's?
I think we took up enough of his time. I don't want to keep him all night.
Yeah.
Listen, I love you guys. I thank you so much for doing this. And listen, we can continue this. We can do another podcast at any time when you want.
That would be great.
That would be great. We'd love it. I'll kind of tune you in on some things going on offline, too, with some podcast things we're doing. So I think there'll be an opportunity for sure.
Okay, that sounds great.
Yeah.
So, I'll come and play anytime you guys want me to, too.
That's great. No, we really appreciate you playing as well.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks so much. Again, thanks for I know you're on the road. We do appreciate you taking the time to do this with us as well. It was a very enjoyable evening. And like I said, great conversation. I think that's what really stood this apart, too.
And I thank you guys so much for having me come on here. And I want to thank the people in the cigar industry for being so cool and like really being supportive people. So this is a great business. And I love you, Alan. Love you, Ralph. Love all my boys at Al Bradley.
Yeah, I saw Jack and Jonathan have come on late, but they've just come in as well. Jack from the West Coast.
I know. Oh, I know who you're talking about. I hope to see him soon. I love nice. Jeff. And I love you, Lindy. Girl.
There you go.
So I will see you guys soon, and you guys have a great evening. Thank you.
Lars, thank you so much. Lars. Again, we appreciate it. That's Lars Teetens, everybody, the great Lars Teetens on the Primetime Show. And what we're going to actually, Aaron and I are going to do one more segment here. So we will, at this point, we'll do one more word from our sponsors, and then we'll get into our final segment here. With Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, master blender Steve Saca set out to create Puro Son Compromiso, cigars without compromise. This represents an expression of Saca's closely held values and attests in three simple words everything Saca wants to accomplish. Cigars are more than a passion of Saca, they are a way of life. As for the brands of Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, Sobra Mesa, Mi Querida, Umbagog, Maestro de Saca, Todos los Dias, and the recently released Sin Compromiso at your local tobacconist. And by Embombay Cigars. Embombay Cigars represent the most admired cigar culture of Cuba. They select the best of the best quality tobacco to use in the aging process. Embombay Cigars are enrolled in Costa Rica by some of the world's most experienced cigar rollers, giving it a unique smoking experience. The band portrays the detailed and artistic nature of our small industry. Try Embombay, Gaia, M. Cuba, and the new M. Esteli line. Embombay Cigars, where the cigar is a way of life. And by Caldwell Cigar Company. Caldwell Cigar Company launched in 2014 with a very simple mantra, create, innovate, ambition. Since day one, they have done things differently. They have challenged the industry norms that produce sticks that time and time again deliver on their promise. Look for Caldwell products and any number of their collaborations at your local retailer today. And by Casa Cuevas Cigars. The Cuevas family has four generations of experience in cigar making. For many years, they have manufactured cigars for many industry leaders at their Las Lavas factory in the Dominican Republic. Now the Cuevas family brings their very own brand to market with Casa Cuevas Cigars. Try the Casa Cuevas Connecticut, Casa Cuevas Habano, and Casa Cuevas Maduro, as well as the recently released Cuevas Reserva line. If they don't carry it, be sure to ask your local retailer for Casa Cuevas cigars. Casa Cuevas cigars, from our casa to yours. You know, Aaron, I didn't have a chance to do this, right? But my cattle baron meat thing in a week. But right. I saw someone actually created a hybrid burger. Basically, I think it was one half of like Impossible Meat. Uh-huh. And one actual meat patty.
Right.
So I was going to attempt to get two Whoppers and actually put them together.
Interesting.
So if I can get a chance, the problem is there's not a Burger King really near me. So I haven't had a chance to do it, but I'm going to report back on that experiment and see how that goes. Yeah. I was kind of, this wasn't a Whopper that someone did this with. They were doing this with some other things right now. I saw this somewhere on social media this week. There's a company that's actually doing that.
I see.
Yeah. All right. Just a couple of comments. That was an interesting interview, to say the least.
Very interesting. But I think it was really good. I mean, he's got a lot of experience with different stuff. And you guys having the tie-in with New York was pretty cool to get a little insight there.
I could tell it was going more in a conversational, so I did switch the gears with that. I do apologize for going down the New York route all, but I kind of sense that would be the way to kind of make this work is what you sense it early on. So I do think it worked on as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, I'm smoking the Serie D right now. It's actually a pretty good cigar too.
Yeah. I lit up the Set in Place. That's a pretty good cigar as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I'd encourage folks, you know, give these cigars a chance is what I'll say.
Yeah. I mean, they are not like what you can typically think of as infused, like the no cloying sweetness to it, or like very botanical-ish kind of things. It's very subtle things that kind of just enhance the tobacco flavors. It's pretty interesting.
You know, it's funny because when I was up with Stogie Santa, he had the Lars Teetens cigars. I think I was telling the story. And I told him, don't light up the SS, right? He lights up the SS and I can't smoke this, you know? I'm like, don't, that's not the cigar you should have smoked, is what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah.
Because I think this one he would really like. This Serie D is one I think he would really like.
Right.
Well, I'm going to have to try to get that one into his hands as well. We just had Juan Cancel joined and Big Scott as well. Mm-hmm. So let's get into our deliberation segment. And I think you know where I got this topic from, right?
From this?
The PCA the new edition of the PCA magazine has been sent to members. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to kind of bash the PCA tonight, but I guess but there's no way to kind of get into this topic without it. All right. In the magazine, if you haven't opened up your magazine and looked at it, there's an article called CigarCon Deconstructed.
Right.
Okay. It's written by Scott Pierce and Scott Regina. And the article talks a lot about the reasons why they did Cigar Con and why they kind of delayed it.
Right.
And there's a couple of interesting points I'll make, right? The first one, I'll just get this right out of the way. They've got to stop with this. They were trying to test this out. Please, guys, stop it.
Yeah.
No one's buying it. I'm not buying it. I went back and listened to all the audio again to see if I can get one inkling of it. I can't.
Yeah, when you say CigarCon 2020, you've already ruined the story.
You've already ruined the story, right. I you know, exactly. So, but that being aside, I mean, I think we've beat that one to death a lot on previous shows, right? I was reading the article, and there was a point where they were trying, and it's a longer, there's a lot of words in that article, even though it's only two pages, right?
Yep.
They start getting into this notion of justifying why to have a cigar con. And in that, they start talking about this idea of strengthening the relationship between consumer and retailer.
Right.
And I kind of took a step back on that, read through it. While it wasn't something new, I kept looking at that, why are they going down this road, right? Mm-hmm. Because I kind of felt when I was looking at this, that this is what I'm going to say right out of the gate, and you can tell me if you agree or disagree with me, this, and this may change what we're going to talk about. I'll contend that when I looked at other businesses of retailer and consumer relationship, I had a tough time finding one that was stronger than the cigar industry. I couldn't find one that was stronger.
Right.
I thought about maybe the bartender. But it would have to be a very small bar. But my feeling is it's a very strong relationship, and we'll talk a lot, think about what makes it very strong. Why do you need to have a cigar kind of event to do that? But I want to talk. Right. I want to focus it more about this relationship because I think it is kind of unique when we went through it.
Yeah.
So here's my question. Why do you? I'll ask you this question first. What do you think makes this a strong relationship? Why is this such a strong relationship?
You have a lot of personal contact. So you're going into an establishment, and the person that's working there, I would say for the most part, is going to be a principal in the business. So you're dealing directly with ownership or management rather than just an employee. That doesn't really have any ties between the consumer and the ownership. So I think that within having a small pool of employees, you're usually dealing with somebody that has a say in how the business runs.
Very true. Very true. I agree with that. I actually didn't think of it that way, but I was thinking, okay, sometimes you have direct if it's a small enough shop, and a lot of us go into small enough shops, you have a direct relationship with the owner.
Right.
So the owner, you actually get to know the owner. The owner a lot of times will sit in the lounge. Some owners will sit in the lounge more than others and spend a lot. I see some owners sit in the lounge and they have some guy work the register, right?
Right.
And they're in the lounge and you get to know this owner as one of the people smoking in the cigar shop. Now, I smoke in cigar shops probably more than you do. I mean, would you say that's fair? But I do see that a lot. And it's not just small cigar shops. Like, I'll go into Corona. I'll go into Smoke Inn. I'll even go up to JR by me. And I know most of the employees who are there. Typically, they're not going to be ones sitting in the lounge. But they're ones who are always asking what they can do for me. They do try to get to know me, not just from what I smoke, but they do try to get to know me. And I think that is something that's really unique that makes it a strong relationship.
Yeah, I mean, the history of the business has been that the tobacconist is supposed to know you so that they can understand what you like, what you didn't like, so that they can kind of direct you to things that you might enjoy. So there's the whole concept of it has been a personal relationship so that you can come in, as you build up that rapport with them, they'll be able to, bring you insight into you know, what they have in the humidor that you might like, steer you away things from things that you may not like. So that, that relationship is, has been a core principle for the, for that type of business for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, there's one guy in our room, in the chat room, Scott, right, is a great example of that too. I know Scott, you know, when he worked at Outland Cigars, I got to know Scott with that. You know, he was managing those stores then. And, you know, at first it was, he was trying to get to know what I smoked. And then it was, we would just, in general, just go in there. I'd go in there and just talk with him sometimes when he was working up the register or whatever, you know. Or, right. You know, he'd come into the lounge for a while when he had a break there and do things like that.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you're going to a shop, if you're going there to actually smoke, not just to kind of buy and leave, it's supposed to be an enjoyable experience. I mean, that's part of the whole thing. It's like not just you, the cigar, and an empty room. You know, it's going to be you and the other patrons or the you know, the people that are working there at the time, kind of have those conversations and kind of like, you know, kind of get away from your daily grind or whatever to kind of enjoy some time away. So that's part of the experience there as well.
Yeah. And what I also see is I see it become an extension outside the shop is what I start to see. Where, you know, I start, like Scott's a good example. Stace Berkland, who also worked with Scott at the old Outland Cigars, we started doing things outside of work together.
Right.
And that's not a unique thing to that one store. Sure. For example, the guys at the cigar shop just moved their shop over the weekend. You know who was helping the guys move were all the customers.
Yep.
Exactly. The customers were helping these guys move. They're loading up cars and stuff like that. I stayed and supervised, by the way. But you know, that's what I did. But no, but in seriousness, you know, people just, hey, what can we do to help here? Right. You see it on social media. They go out there and they promote these retail shops. Yep. So I think, you know, you look at this, again, I'm basing it on my experience in the Southeast and some other stores. I guess I go back and think, well, what? So you're going to take these guys to Vegas?
Yeah.
And walk around a show floor for a few. I don't see how you're selling that to your retailers. Have got to be saying you're nuts. I mean, if you're not connecting with your customers, you know.
Well, I mean, I can see an extension of what they're doing already in the store. I mean, if they can just expand that out and they say, all right, now, here we go. We're going to Vegas or wherever the show was at. We're going to kind of take this relationship to another level now. We're going to actually, you know, go around and introduce you to some people that maybe don't get to come into the shop and do events that you haven't met before. You know, people that we, you know, carry a lot of their brands and things like that. So I think it's a possibility that kind of extends the relationship even further. Or for the shops that maybe are newer, they don't have an established relationship with the customers, or they're just kind of looking to like change how they do it. It gives them a little bit more of an opportunity to kind of start building that relationship as well.
Yeah. I mean, and to that point, you know, with Scott, again, we all got in an RV. This is about 6 or 7 years ago. A bunch of customers, the owner was in there of Outland, Scott and Mark Boley, who were managing the stores back then. We got an RV and we drove to Chattanooga. Scott drove us to Chattanooga. To the Chattanooga Tweet Up.
Right.
So that was a case where, hey, you know what? There was a relationship that the owner had with the owner of Burn. Burns Tobacconist, and it made some sense to take a group of people. He had an RV at the time, got us all in the RV. We went and spent the weekend there. So that was a way we were able to kind of foster that relationship. And it really wasn't about like, I think when you have this level of a relationship, I think you know what your customers are smoking. I think you got to give the retailer more credit. They know what their customers are smoking. They shouldn't be needing to figure it out. I understand with new releases, maybe it takes a little time, but in general, I think they that should be able to be figured out.
Yeah. I mean, it really would depend on the retailer as to which, you know, how heavy they are into that. But, like I said, it kind of gives them a chance to kind of take that, a little bit further that they couldn't do in their own shop.
Yeah. No, I think very, very so, very much so. So I think, like I said, I think, like you said, the opportunities are certainly there to do those types of things. I know we had a conversation at our shop recently about going and going to do curling. There's a curling center up in.
Okay.
So I think we've been talking about that. We just haven't been able to get off the ground, but we're just like a group and we go up there and the owner wants to do this and go curl. So
sure.
you know, I can tell you when Todd Johnson, owns the cigar shop, got elected to the state senate, a lot of people were at his party that night. So I think the relationships are certainly there. I don't see what PCA is trying. If they're trying to sell that as a big selling point, I just question it that they're not in touch with the industry enough. And they should be really – that maybe shouldn't be the route they're going. It certainly doesn't hurt it by taking them out there. I don't think it'll hurt them by taking them out there. But I don't think that's a necessary part. I think there's enough interaction there where it's strong enough.
Yeah. I mean, another possibility is that for the retailers that can do a really good job of make the event work for them, it may give them the opportunity to kind of show off a little bit to some of the other retailers, and other retailers might be a little bit more open to like reaching out to them and kind of getting a feel for a little bit more about how they do things in their shops and why they thought this was a good idea, and then kind of get a little bit more insight that they can bring back to their shop and kind of improve how those relationships go. I mean, I've always thought that the trade show should be kind of more of a peer group style, where it's helping the retailers improve their business and not being where, you know, some retailers are necessarily like, you know, I already got the secrets, I'm not going to share them with you. I don't think that that's really necessarily how the majority of the retailers would look at it. But I just don't see enough of that kind of, I mean, I know some of them are chatting about, you know, what they're doing in their shops, stuff like that, but I just don't think that to this point, PCA has done enough to kind of like build that kind of relationship between retailers. So this might be a way to kind of jumpstart that a little bit. And if it's not actually something that the PCA is actively trying to do, just something that organically comes out of it for the retailers themselves. Like they just take the opportunity that this is an event where I can actually gain that insight. Because I know when I go to IT conferences, some of the most valuable time is me just talking to other people that are attending, finding about, you know, certain products or certain processes and things like that, that I'm not even getting from, you know, whoever's, you know, exhibiting at the show.
You know, I've always poked a little fun about the TAA convention, so to speak. Right. And I think everyone's, you know, knows about there's a party aspect with it, but I also do think from talking to retailers who've gone to the TAA, those conversations do really happen at the TAA. More so because it is a more relaxed atmosphere to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, as opposed to other things. And the other thing, you know, I'll mention, like, there's retailers like Abe. There's a guy named Russ Sutton who's up at he works at Cutters in Atlanta. I mean, I've seen these guys go to different, like, they run Herfs. Russ has a Herf he runs out of Atlanta. Abe obviously says great book. Mm-hmm. They've gone to these other ones to see how they're done. And a lot of times the retailers who are hosting these HERFs, they're very open to that. You know, they're very open to share the best practices with that. And I think if PCA could take that peer group, like you mentioned, to another level, I think that would be something more. I know you have the opening gala and stuff, but the problem is with the opening gala is everyone's getting starstruck who's there.
Right.
And it's the first day, everyone's in Vegas. It's a bigger setting. I think if they had maybe some smaller group settings, it would be something that you can do.
Yeah. And as a kind of a peer group concept, I think that would be a driver to get more retailers to actually come to the show. Now there's a reason to go, not necessarily just for the, you know, visiting the brands and seeing new product. It's actually like just to come out to chat with the fellow retailers about business and stuff like that. So,
yeah,
you know, that's one of the big things is trying to drive more retailers to back to the show. And if you give them a reason like that, then that might drive some more attendance.
You know, I looked at the cover of PCA this month, the art of merchandising. And I read through the article. I thought it was actually a pretty good article. But, you know, how many people are going to pick up a magazine and read? There's good content in here, but how many people are going to pick up it and read it? Right. You know, so much so in a, you know, and Alan Rubin's kind of mentioning something too about, you know, some best practices presentations. I think that's something where, you know, sometimes again, when people aren't going to pick up a magazine, but they're at the trade show and there's something like that. They've done a little bit of that, I guess, with the lunchtime things. But I think the problem with the lunchtime things is they're on the trade show floor and people are busy buying.
Right.
Exactly. So I know from, yeah, so I think that's a problem too with that. But I do agree with you on that. Is it, you know, I mentioned earlier, do you think there are any other industries that come close to what this retailer-consumer relationship is in the cigar business?
Um, I'd say maybe like the small bookstores, things like that, where you had people that were like, you know, frequent visitors to that, and you had almost kind of like that librarian type relationship kind of thing where, you know, people were coming in looking for specific things or they, you know, genres, and people can kind of guide them to things like that. I think that might be something somewhat similar to that, but there's probably some others. It's just not things that I'm involved in that have that kind of relationship.
Yeah. I mean, I could tell you, from my dad, he used to go around to like the car repair shops and stuff like that. And he, you know, because he knew people. This is when he left the music business and he was selling cars and he'd hang out like that. But it wasn't to the extent, I think, that a lot of people did that. But I know that's
like golf pro shops or something like that. Like things like, you know, seems like, you know, that's a time where a bunch of people would be spending time together and stuff like that. So it might be another area.
What about restaurants? See, I thought restaurants is tough. Because, you know, I think you're not spending a lot of time with your waiter or waitress, you know, unless it's slow.
Yeah, I mean, it may be more like, you know, the proprietor of the restaurant. Yeah. Like if they spend time in the restaurant a lot, kind of, you know, float around table to table kind of thing, that might be able to provide it.
I thought barbershop was a good one.
Yeah, that would actually be
a good one. I think that was a good one because, I mean, how many people, you go to a barbershop, I want Sal, or I want Amy, you know, something like that. Yep. You know, so maybe sometimes you get that one as well. Again, I don't think it's as much time because you're in a barbershop maybe once a month, right? As opposed to a cigar shop, you're in there every day.
Yeah,
some people are in there all day. You know, so it becomes a little different with that.
Scott mentioned the ski industry, so I guess at the lodge or whatever for the
I
don't skier, so I can't really say.
I don't ski. My one time I went skiing, I just hung out in the ski lounge. I quickly realized it was not something I was going to participate in.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one as well. But yeah, I kind of go back again. I think this is one of the unique things about the cigar business. So.
Yeah. And there's some, like, I'm sure that, you know, music stores and stuff like that used to be that way, but it's not, that doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. We were talking to Lars about going into the stores in Manhattan. I did know the people who worked in the music stores. Right. Cause I'd probably go up to Manhattan twice a week at times to go into, mm-hmm. And often we would just go in there and we just browse or listen to music and just, you know, it was kind of like, we did a lot of window shopping, but they knew we were in there, and if there was something we wanted, we'd buy. So they did know us.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, that is a good one. And Scott even said there's some people who live in their cigar shop, and I can tell you,
I can believe that.
No, I can tell you that's a true story. Now I'll just kind of leave it at that. There was a guy who was living in the cigar shop.
Okay.
So this guy, he would he'd be the last one to go, right? And then he would get in his car, and he was a guy that gave him a key, like our members had a key. So this guy would he would leave with us, right? He'd get in his car, and instead of going home, he'd drive around for like 20 minutes and then go back into the shop and spend the night there. Yeah, so we actually
– all right.
And then, he'd be the first guy there. and then they figured out he was shaving in there and stuff. And then when he didn't shower, it became a bigger problem. So
there you go.
Yeah, it's a true story. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So, yeah. Kind of going back to this again, what about the relationship with retailer and manufacturer? Do you think that's a strong relationship?
I would think so for sure. There's definitely shops that have really good relationship with brands. They've, you know, get to the point where they're doing shop exclusives and things like that, or they're just, you know, they really know all the turns for the, you know, what they're selling and stuff like that. And they have a really good ordering process and all that stuff. So I think that there's definitely some retailers that kind of have that relationship. There's others that probably don't do it well, I'm sure. But I think that there should be a good relationship there.
See, I think that's not as close as the one that I see with the consumer. And the reason I say is because there's so much turnover in with the reps. So yeah, it definitely comes down to, if you want to, how you're defining the relationship. Is it the rep retailer relationship, or is it the company retailer relationship?
Yeah. Well, I think we see this a lot of times where a rep can change companies and the retailer will follow the rep, not the brand.
Yes. Know? Oh, I've seen that a lot.
And that happens with consumers as well. A rep can change brands and a consumer will absolutely switch to where the rep is. They'll, you know, whatever loyalty you thought was there, and they only smoke that brand. As soon as that rep leaves, they no longer smoke that brand, which is interesting.
Yeah, and then I've seen that a lot. And then when the new rep comes in, and for some reason he doesn't call on that store. Mm-hmm. And we get that a lot in the Southeast. Right. And it's perplexing. A lot of it has to do with certain retailers want exclusivity over other retailers, and certain reps will buckle to that, and certain ones won't. And that it changes the landscape very. I've seen big accounts become very small accounts overnight when that happens.
Sure.
So that point. But I also see the point where there's companies that, like, there's retailers that have such a strong relationship with the brand or the company that, you know, any rep that goes in there is going to be okay, because there's that top relationship, particularly with some of the bigger retailers that you mm-hmm. see. Or, you know, that, or even with some of the small companies, you'll get, you know, hey, you got to call on this shop. They've been doing X number of business for years with us, you know.
Right.
Like that. Yep. So there's going to be an article on Coop on that piece as well, just kind of not meant to be a total critique of the PCA, but just kind of like, I'm not buying this whole messaging they were giving with this. It just seemed like it was
There's a little backpedaling to it, to try to make sense of it, to sell it again.
Yeah. Did you feel, reading that article, that they were going to try to sell the concept again that they presented this summer?
Absolutely.
That's what I felt. I'll give them the benefit. Maybe they'll use that as a starting point, but I didn't feel like they would. I almost feel like they needed to go back to square one with this and really kind of look at some of these focus groups or committees that they're doing and kind of come up with some newer ideas before trying to use these committees to sell this idea. I don't see how it's going to work.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the concept's out there. They can't bring the words back. People already have their understanding of what it is. I don't think they completely revamp it without, because I think it would take them a bit too long to come up with a new concept for it. So I think they actually need to do the work that they should have done ahead of time before they announced it the first time, to flesh it out to what it would act. I mean, really, you could try to sell it however you want to sell it. That's, I think, secondary. You need to have the logistics of how the thing will actually work before you really get to that point where you're like, all right, we're ready to do it next year kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not having that plan, I think, was a huge mistake.
I totally agree.
Because you couldn't answer questions for anybody.
They couldn't answer any questions. Yeah, I mean, it just showed. You know, it just showed how. I mean, I think good for them that they at least figured out they had to put the brakes on that. I mean, but I think it just took the backlash to do that.
Yeah.
You know, Allison made a good comment just back to that whole comment about the reps. You know, she said mm-hmm. the sad part is when you meet reps that are too lazy to show up at a shop because it's slightly out of the way. I totally agree with that. I mean,
yeah.
Figure a way to get to your shop, you know, and I see that happen a lot in the Charlotte market, because there's not a lot of stores here, and they're kind of all different. If you could, they're all scattered at different parts of the city.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. All right. So one other thing I want to mention, there was some drama this week on social media.
Yes.
Does anyone want to guess in the chat room who created some drama this week?
I'm sure everybody in the chat room knows who it was.
Yeah. Boy, Steve, boy, if Steve wanted to get some attention, he got it this week. Mm-hmm. What'd you think of that whole thing?
I thought it was interesting. I thought it was okay as well. I didn't think it was a black eye on anything, or, you know, a black eye for Steve or anything like that. I think it was okay the way it kind of shook out.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, do you like that tactic, though? Do you think it's a good tactic or a bad tactic?
Which part are we talking about?
What Steve kind of did, you know, and Steve basically, you know, someone basically critiqued Steve, and he called him out on it.
I think
it wasn't a reviewer. It wasn't a reviewer.
Right. I think it kind of goes along with kind of our conversation about PCA and relationships and things like that, and what other industries have this kind of relationship. I mean, this is a small group of people. You're really just right now. You're just talking about the social media cigar smokers and the brands that are social media aware, which is very small compared to cigar smoking group, right? And you know, in this current state, you have very easy access to brand owners. You can talk directly to the person who's blending, who owns the company, and that's, you don't get that in very few industries out there. And then also the fact is, in social media, you know, you have the opportunity to kind of voice your opinion, and typically it's fairly anonymous, so there's really no worries about any kind of blowback. But in this small group, you have to be prepared, and you have to understand that they could talk directly right back to you.
Yep.
And you have to kind of accept, if you're criticizing, you have to accept criticism in return. So if you call somebody out and they respond to you, hey, you got to take your medicine, man.
Well, I mean, yeah, go back to the Sin Compromiso review. I didn't get quite blasted like by Soccer. In fact, it wasn't really Soccer, but he gave his opinion back to me. He said, you know, if I'm going to write something about his work, he certainly has a right to kind of respond back on that.
Absolutely. One of the things I love about this is that you get to talk to the people that you're, you know, the cigars you're reviewing, and you can have frank conversations with each other.
Right. And Sean Miles mentions, you know, defending yourself, it should be allowed. I think Sokka can get away with doing what he did because he's Sokka. And you know, his personality lends itself to that.
You know the personality already.
Like right.
The comment I made in one of the things was, the guy knew the bear that he was poking.
Like, absolutely.
It's not like he didn't know who this guy was or what his track record was. He knew exactly who he was saying that to. And he knew that he probably would get a response if he saw the comment. So, that was an expectation.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, in a lot of, you know, in the social media culture and things like that, like, people responding is usually not a good thing. Because there's so many people out there that will kind of like pile on and like really like there's enough leverage from the consumer side to make the person, you know, regret what they did, and they can actually have an effect on the business or their persona or whatever it is. Like, you know, when you see like athletes or whatever responding to people, and then people start like bashing this athlete, and then they get a bad rep and stuff like that. In the cigar industry, it's not quite that. Like, you know, you have enough fanboys that are going to side with the brand unless somebody did something completely like wrong. And this, I don't think this was a wrong thing what Steve did. So I enjoy that you're not getting kind of that like anonymous, like mob reaction that can have an effect on you. You have the ability to really fire back. And if you can support it and handle it, then you'll still be in good shape. It's not like you're going to, you know, the brand's not going out of business because he got told a guy to go fuck himself. And that's what's great.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, I was thinking about the whole, what you just said, you know, with the athletes, you know, usually when an athlete like declares war on the media, he'll get everyone on their side.
Right.
You know, against the media. And it's kind of similar in the cigar business with that, the media, you know, but there's a difference. I think that usually when the media is so strong in sports that they usually can fend it off.
Absolutely, yeah.
Cigar, we usually, how can I put it? I tend to see the media guys, they have to explain themselves. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, no, don't, you have to stand behind what you wrote or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or what happens is the media guys get very, in the cigar business, if someone's singling out the media, they immediately think it's them, and they have to justify oh, it wasn't me. You know, that's not me. I don't think like that, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So yeah. That's the difference what I see with that. But
yeah, I mean, like, there's other businesses, like in the beer industry, where like a brewer says something and something like that. Like, there's enough blowback that those companies can just go out of business because, you know, things like that happen. But
really,
yeah, I mean, this is a different group. It's just, it doesn't work quite that way, and I think it doesn't. More honest work there.
I mean, do you think Sokka came out of this stronger? I think he did. I think he came out of this, you know. He got a lot of attention this week. On what would have been a slow week, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for everybody that likes to voice their opinion and stuff like that, you know, they understand what happened and they saw how it worked and that, you know, you can voice what you want to say as long as you stand behind it. Yeah. But in the end, I mean, the two guys, they talked to each other directly. They worked it out. I don't think there's any animosity between the two of them anymore. So not that it didn't generate further animosity between other brand owners and that person or other people that were chiming in. But hey, that's the way it works. I mean, you're not going to be friends with everybody. It's okay not to like people, and you can continue to do that.
Exactly. Exactly. I totally agree with you on that, too. So, but I think in the end, everyone patched everything up, it sounded like, too. Who was involved with that. So I think that was a good thing too.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anything else before we wrap it up?
I will say one thing. Riste mentioned that if we talked about this on the show, he was going to retire from the cigar industry.
Okay.
So I've always known him to be a man of his word. So I would expect that.
Wait, talk about this topic?
Yeah. So I would
thank you, Riste, for your participation in the cigar industry.
He's wrapping up. The business, but I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, Riste, we thank you for your participation in the cigar industry. I will let you know that Tyrannical Buck is still eligible for the coupe list, though, so you don't have to worry about that. But thanks again.
Yeah,
I didn't know if it was that or if it was the music. He was like,
no, it was the soccer topic.
It was the soccer. I didn't know that when I brought this up, by the way.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to do it because you know, the whole thing came up from the Z-Man discussion. So you know, they was like, oh, this is another thing that we're going to talk about. So I was like, yeah, I'll definitely make sure we get it going.
Yeah, that's so yeah. Thanks, Riste. You could join those folks who are moving to Canada, who were going to move to Canada 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, we have to tag Riste on it. We'll have to find out.
One more thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
We're doing a contest for Acid Cuba Artes on developing palettes right now. So if you're interested in winning some Cuba Artes, go over to the site. Right on the top banner, you can find out how to enter.
How'd that score, Aaron?
It was all right.
I don't know if that's like
you know the track record.
I know.
if it's a contest, it's, well, I won't say that. The majority of the time, if it's a contest, we didn't score that great. But it's not that's just how it works out. It's not because, oh, we don't like the cigars, so we're gonna give them away. That's just the way it works out.
It works out. You have more of the cigars. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Oh, jeez. Oh, it's all good. That's all good. So, okay, next week we have Sebastian from Cavalier Cigars on.
Yes.
So it'll be the first time we talk with him on that, so it'll be pretty good. The week after, we start to be determined with that. And then the following week, we have Carney on. So so we have – and then Lizona Palooza is after that. So
yep.
So so big things happening there.
Yeah, good start to the month with Lars, man.
Good start with the month with Lars. Definitely, I think it was a different show.
Yep.
Per se, I think it was, like I said, I don't know if anyone's done a live concert on there. I almost was going to ask him to do a couple more songs, except I didn't know how, you know, I didn't know how much time he had too, and he was at an event. I want to be sensitive to that, and they did. Sure. He made a lot of time for that, but he was awesome there. Like I said, I didn't, you know, when I met him, just real quick before we wrap up, when I met him, I was expecting a very reclusive type guy because he was just not around, and I found the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like he'd be a really fun guy to just bullshit with.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. I'd be interested in sitting down with him and just chit-chatting.
No, definitely. Definitely, for sure. All right. His audio was a little off. Sometimes that happens. I apologize.
I mean, yeah, using a computer mic, it's just...
It's tough sometimes, yeah.
We weren't going to have a studio quality, unplugged scenario kind of thing going on.
But it happens, yeah. I mean, we try our best here on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I thought it was my audio at first because I was getting some feedback. But I think it was on that. But that's okay. It does happen from time to time, folks. So, all right. That's going to wrap up Primetime episode 112 into the annals of history for this Thursday, October 3rd. Now, Friday, October 4th on the East Coast. We'll see everybody next week. Have a great night, everybody.
See you guys.